Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, thank you once again in advance for your ongoing participation in the 50-50 raffle. We got another one coming up for Game 2 tomorrow night inside KeyBank Center, but you don't have to wait till the game. If you're anywhere in the state right now, you can buy the tickets. Scan the QR code on the screen or go to sabres.com/5050. We have a guaranteed jackpot of $100,000. It was close to $200,000 last night. We've seen $500,000. We've seen almost $400,000 multiple times. All of this presented by Northtown Automotive. And, of course, the proceeds from these 50-50 raffles go through the Sabres Foundation, get redistributed through our community, and it has been quite the hot commodity on game nights this year. And again, the reminder, you don't have to be in the building. You can get your tickets now in advance of Game 2 tomorrow night. So we've got 6:30 pregame coverage tomorrow night right here on MSG and our social platforms.
I just want to give a shout out because you talk about Sabres Foundation, and Razor and I went for a visit to the Seneca Street Community Development right down here from the arena. Mm-hmm. It's an after-school program. Kids go there, and they were gifted hockey sticks and net and balls and stuff like that for. And we there was face paint, and we signed autograph. And they're an organization that benefits from the Sabres Foundation. Yeah. And the people were fantastic. So that was a great visit by Razor and myself. And the whole community relation and everybody from KeyBank, too. Yeah. They were there, the KeyBank Foundation. So that was great.
Well, it continues. It's always been a staple of it, a team and its tie-in with the community. Rasmus Dahlin has certainly been noted for that. Now he's a Norris Trophy finalist for his on-ice contributions this year, and the captain has his team in a 1-0 lead against Montreal heading into Game 2 tomorrow night. Darren Dreger from TSN, our hockey insider, joins us once again. Dregs, great to have you with us. Just a quick thought, or longer, on this year's finalists for the Norris and the fact that Rasmus Dahlin is one of the three.
Yeah, and deservedly so. I think that we can all agree on that. I will be curious to see the rundown of the Norris Trophy finalists from all of those who have the privilege of voting, and I'm pleased to be one of those. It's a process. We've talked about it before. Rasmus Dahlin was high on my list right out of the gate, and I just like the way he plays the game, and we saw evidence of that in the opener of the series last night. You know, he's got that kind of, I mean, aside from the skill set, he has that innate ability where you want to cross-check him in the face lots of times. You know, just because he can get under your skin, he's physical.
Yeah.
He defends well, like the leadership qualities, on and on and on and on it goes. And when I think of, and I've told you about my process before, and I won't bore you, but I go to former Norris Trophy winners, and I do it varying points of the year, mm-hmm. because to me it's important to acknowledge the season in its entirety. And, you know, I'll tip my hand a little bit here because I will get criticized after the fact. I didn't see Evan Bouchard of the Edmonton Oilers as a top five. Like, he's in that conversation, obviously, but it's mostly because of the second half of the season that he had. You know, I don't know that you should be able to wipe away the first 15 or 20 games when you're making mistake after mistake after mistake and it ends up in your net. I mean, the Norris Trophy, even though it's drifted away many years ago into being, you know, honoring the most offensive defenseman, that's not the spirit of the award. It's not. And this year was difficult because Rasmus was right up there. Werenski, absolutely right up there. Someone identified to me, and this isn't a knock on Cale Makar, I guess it's somewhat of a balance if you look at Bouchard, if you look at Lane Hutson. If you study those players shift by shift, the offensive guys, what you recognize is, hey, they all make mistakes. Maybe it's different in Canada, because when Evan Bouchard makes a mistake, man, we're all over it. It's on every highlight reel, you know, north of the border. That's just the way it is. And maybe Makar doesn't get that same level of treatment. But I digress here. For me, I love the crop this year because you've got good, really good star all-round defensemen like Rasmus Dahlin, who very much are deserving of this level of recognition.
Dregs, were you out in the panel yesterday with TSN for the post game of the Habs? You were, right? So
the hot zone, Marty. Call it what it is. It's called the hot zone.
The hot zone. You guys do a long post game hot zone with plenty of sound. Duffer and I were doing our own hot zone in the studio after the game as well. So when you were doing the hot zone and talking about Dahlin and talking about that group of defense with the Sabres, Byram scoring another goal. Do you think that is the one thing that separates the Buffalo Sabres to a lot of other teams in the NHL right now in the playoffs, and especially the Canadiens, that top four on the back end?
Yeah, it's tough to beat, isn't it? It really is. And sure, there was a mistake made. I think it was Owen Power on the one goal there. But, I mean, we're splitting hairs when we get to this point, second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Just everything about the approach. I thought Alex Lyon was really good again. Montreal admitted that they didn't have the start that they wanted. Obviously, they fall very quickly, 2-0. I think that there's a lot of things that went into that start, though. And for me, it starts with the defense and how quickly they transition the puck. It looked to me like the Canadiens at times felt like they were a little bit overwhelmed by the overall pace and the attack of the Buffalo Sabres. And, you know, we saw rush chance after rush chance after rush chance. And that's not something that the Montreal Canadiens really had to deal with a lot in their seven-game series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So it was either Montreal did a better job in that series in containing and breaking up that transition game so, you know, that the Lightning couldn't establish that attack, or it's Buffalo just being better in those areas. But they certainly were in the opener of the series, and that, for me, starts with Buffalo's top four on defense.
Who would be your front runner right now for the Conn Smythe?
Ooh,
that's a good one. Well, the jury is obviously still out, so it's so early. The way that Logan Stankoven got going for the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round against Ottawa, I was like, man, if this kid keeps it up, and he's still going. Yeah. And I made this point in the hot zone last night after Montreal and Buffalo's game. And again, we're just seeing the early stages of this series. But, and maybe it's not the way they play, but maybe it is in the chemistry that's established. I do see some similarities in that second line of the Carolina Hurricanes, where you've got the undeniable chemistry now of Hall and Stankoven and Jackson Blake. Yeah. And what I'm getting and seeing from Doan and Benson, especially, and Norris. Mm-hmm. So let's see how, you know, what adjustments. Marty St. Louis wouldn't talk about him post-game. Why would he? I mean, why would he show his hand in any way? And he did admit that he's got to rewatch the game and look at some of the areas that they've got to clean up. But, you know, historically we know that the Stanley Cup is often won by the teams that maybe don't have the obvious emerge, you know, because your top line guys normally will neutralize each other. So who else is going to step up? I think that Zach Benson is just a fun kid to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I do. And, you know, the swagger he plays with, the edge that he plays with. I mean, we talk about big moments and how these young developing stars don't seem to be overwhelmed anymore. Well, he's exhibit A for me, at least in watching, you know, and he was good in the opening round against Boston. Don't get me wrong, but he stepped up his game for me in a big way last night.
A big Westerner that traveled to carnivals in
Love
the summertime.
Kid.
If you want to go back and watch Embedded on the Sabres, and he would go to cities with his family, setting up like the fair and the carnivals, and then he'd go to hockey school while they would. Benson has been fantastic. It's a lot of fun. Talking about Westerners, when you're not doing the hot zone, you're doing the insiders and all of that. We had Pierre LeBrun on the show yesterday. He talked about the Toronto situation and them winning the lottery. But I want to flip it to the Vancouver Canucks, because they don't have a GM. They're searching for a GM, and they were hoping to get the number one overall pick. They get third in the whole conversation, now dropping two spots. But what's the GM search looking like in Vancouver and that situation? Yeah.
They're whittling it down, but, you know, even as late as Tuesday, when Jim Rutherford, who also announced, by the way, that he's stepping away from his existing title of president, he will take on an advisory role. He acknowledged, I think he said they were down to five. But now that the draft lottery is passed, I feel like there's less of a sense of urgency in Vancouver. But it's also an important distinction to note that because Rutherford is stepping away from his title as the overseer of hockey operations in Vancouver, it will be the owner, Francesco Aquilini, who ultimately makes the hire, who hires the general manager. And I think that's why Pierre Dorion, with all due respect to Pierre, has lasted this long in the process, is because he interviewed very, very well, and there seemed to be, at least I'm told, a connection with Aquilini. Now, I don't know that that means that he is the front runner. It's his job to lose. You know, where's Adams in all of this? But it sounds like they're down to the last four or five, and they will want to get it done sooner than later because, you know, between now and the draft, it's not that far away. Most clubs are getting into their amateur meetings. Some are already finished up their pro scouting meetings. So that's work that you would want the new general manager to be heavily involved with and spearheading. And I got time for Ryan Johnson, the internal candidate in Vancouver as well. This young guy has been groomed to be an NHL general manager. It's up to Aquilini to decide whether or not he feels that he's ready, or he's draped or surrounded by individuals who can help him get to where he needs to be ready. So they're certainly nearing the final stages of that process in Vancouver.
Dregs, obviously it was confirmed yesterday what's been known for a while, or expected, I should say, for a while, about the salary cap upper limit being at $104 million. The one part that doesn't get talked about probably as much anymore is the floor at 76.9. Is there actually any news around the salary cap for you, whether it's this coming season or beyond? Like, are there any under the surface concerns right now with everything, or is everybody pretty good 1 through 32 in the NHL with how things are proceeding?
The commissioner would say that everybody is good. You know, the financial stability of all franchises has arguably never been better, and I believe that. That's not lip service. But Duffer, you asked the question in an appropriate manner in asking, you know, are there concerns? Okay, well, there are concerns, and there are concerns from some NHL owners that in the not too distant future, and this would be a good thing for players. I mean, the end of the day, the salary cap goes higher. The players get the same share, but you're talking about bigger dollars because the slice of the pie grows in financial terms. So is that going to encourage the haves and the have-nots? You're always going to have your cap-spending teams who, okay, you know, the cap goes to $130, $150 million. Well, they've got the revenue. They've got the hockey-related revenue to deal with that. You know, they're not worried about that. So they're going to spend their money on the top players, and they're going to try and build juggernauts. Not every team in the league can afford to do that. You know, not to go small market, because look, I our eyes would glaze over if I even tried to explain what the new version of revenue sharing is. Like, there's so many twists and turns in all of this, but what it means is a team like Winnipeg, the smaller market teams, get a bigger chunk in different ways, which will help them through the stages of the salary cap going up. But at the end of the day, you still only have so many seats, and you can only go to the consumer in your smaller market and say, okay, we're raising season tickets and everything that goes into that. So those would be the concerns from an ownership level. And fellas, you'd be surprised at some of the owners who I've talked to about this, who you would think shouldn't be concerned with it, but they are.
Is Carolina a team that is going to be like pushing back a little bit when it comes to the growth of the salary cap, just because we know their owner and the way that they work is very stingy over there? I would think they'd be very vocal with that.
Yeah, I would think so too. But in full disclosure, I've never had this conversation with Tom Dunn, and I have had it with others. I mean, there's not too much about the workings of the NHL, particularly around that salary cap process, that he likes. You know what? I have time for Dunn's approach, because, you know, you're always going to find coaches who want to coach at the NHL level. He's got one of the best in the business in Rod Brind'Amour, who just loves that area. So, I mean, Rod could have made millions and millions more than he's making Carolina and has made in Carolina if he was willing to move. He just likes what his family has in Carolina. I have time for that. You know, you think of Eric Tulsky. He's a sharp hockey guy. one of, if not the lowest paid general managers in the National Hockey League, but I'm sure he's very appreciative of the job that he has as one of 32 GMs. So Tom Dundon's a shrewd dude, as people in the NBA are starting to realize now.
Drakes, thanks so much. Enjoy the hot zone.
I will. I love that beard, Duffer. That playoff beard is something else.
It's envious. It is something. That is for sure. It's, thankfully, it's a little softer than it was a couple of days ago.
Yes.
Probably emblematic of how I feel about myself on a daily basis. Yes. Join us for the drive-through rally. It's presented by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, and it's happening today. You can roll through Tops Friendly Markets on Orchard Park Road in West Seneca from 4 to 6 to pick up your street sign. We will have Sabretooth there and an awful lot more. You can go to sabres.com/playoffs for additional locations and details. And we will dive into Hart Trophy finalists next.
It's Jeremy White.
Play forced out to center. Here's a chance. 3-on-1 to the line for Buffalo. Pass across. Scores! Great play to Doan in front. And the Sabres, Benson and Doan, connect for the first goal of this series. Pass to the bumper spot. That one back in front. Scores! Side to the net. Hot Wheels McLeod parked in the right spot, and the Sabres take a 2-0 lead. Buffalo inside their own zone. The bank pass quickly ahead to Greenway. In the Montreal zone, fires a shot, scores! Welcome back to the Greenway of doing things in the playoffs, and the Sabres take a 3-1 lead. Here's Byram right up the middle with a shot, scores! Bo Byram! Bangs it home with 10:59 remaining in the second period, and the Buffalo Sabres are up 4-1 in game one of round two.
Yeah, baby, yeah!
On WGR.
Sabres win 4-2. They take a 1-0 series lead. We're talking about it with you here on WGR. Game two will be tomorrow at KeyBank Center, and joining us on the Western Hotline is insider of TSN, RDS, senior NHL columnist for The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun on the Western Hotline. Pierre, good morning. Welcome back to Buffalo.
Yes. Yes, other than the draft and the combine here and there, it's been a while since I've been back for a meaningful game, and I guess that's what happens
that's
when you
right.
go 14 years without making the playoffs.
I'll tell you, the combine and the draft here, it's like no on-ice stuff, and this is the best on-ice stuff, right? Playoffs finally back here.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
What an atmosphere in KeyBank Center last night. That was just awesome. I mean, I've tweeted this many times, but and I mean it when I say it, NHL's a better place, and the Buffalo Sabres are humming along.
Well, they're humming. They've been humming most of the year and into the playoffs and into round two. You know, I'm interested to hear your thoughts like before the series and what we learned really out of game one. The Sabres get a game one victory. Seen a little bit of reaction that Montreal might have been a little spent from the Tampa series that went seven games. They haven't been back home yet. So what's your takeaway from game one and what it says about the series to this point?
I think we're going to get better hockey than what we got in game one. I mean, I could tell even Lindy Ruff felt that there's another level for the Sabres. And I thought it was, you know, the Sabres had to do what they did last night, and they were really impressive in how they closed it out in the third period, which I know they've been something that when you talked about after the game, they've learned to do really since in the second half of the year. And that was the most impressive part of last night for me, was shutting it down. Because, you know, after Kirby Dach made it 4-2, Canes had a number of shifts late in the second where they were pressing. And I remember thinking, boy, if they get one here, this could be interesting in the third. But I'm really impressed the way the Sabres closed it out, which is such an important attribute when you're becoming a Stanley Cup contender. But overall, I thought it was kind of a tepid game one. Like, I think that these two teams were feeling each other out, even though they know each other well, being divisional rivals. But I think this is going to go next level on Friday, is my suspicion. There's just so much skill and ability to go up and down the ice on these two rosters, and I think both teams kind of held back a bit last night.
Yeah, I mean, opening round series, we've noted the difference here between, you know, the Boston matchup and the Montreal matchup, and Boston was, you know, a stout team, but not exactly speedy, and I think, you know, for Montreal playing against Tampa, the Lightning can sometimes, you know, play a physical style and do a lot of stuff after the whistle, and last night's game was maybe just the start of a very free skating series that did not include a lot of that stuff.
Totally. No, it was really empty of the nonsense after the whistle for the most part. It'll come at some point because these two teams will start to annoy each other. But I think the skating ability of both these teams will be on full display as we go on, and I think it's probably a welcome sight for a lot of the players on both teams. That's the kind of hockey they want to play. But certainly with Buffalo winning game one, that puts a little pressure on Montreal heading into tomorrow night. And in particular, you know, Cole Caulfield now has gone 8 playoff games without an even strength goal in these playoffs after scoring 51 during the regular season. I mean, it's not totally fair just to focus on him, but the reality is that storyline was able to get kind of shelved because the Canadiens were playing such a good defensive game against Tampa that, you know, they were winning games and had a great series, and it wasn't the headline, but if the Canadiens get behind in a 2-0 series hole here and he hasn't scored again Friday night, then that's going to start to get magnified in Montreal, like you can imagine.
Do you see anything in Caulfield why that has been the case? Is he getting the opportunities but snake-bitten, or do you feel like there's been something missing from that line, from that game, throughout this postseason, through 8 games in?
Well, I think his confidence is a little shaken right now because it's been 8 games, and he's the kind of guy that takes shots from certain spots on the ice during the year when he was scoring 51, and I kind of see him second-guessing himself right now, and a lot of that is the job that Anthony Cirelli and Brandon Nagel did on that line in the opening round. I mean, honestly, I know the Lightning lost, but the defensive job that Cirelli did, no wonder he was a Selke Trophy nominee yesterday, is as impressive as I've seen in years in the playoff series. Like, that Montreal line has scored a lot of goals this year, and Tampa just completely shut it down. Just one even strength goal for Suzuki's line with Caulfield and Slafkovský. Well, by game 7, they weren't even together. Slafkovský was on another line, as Marty St. Louis tried to find something. They were back together last night, and they did have some, you know, they had more looks and more open ice. But at the end of the day, and I thought Slafkovský looked dangerous, but Caulfield, to me, doesn't look like himself. So that'll be a storyline here.
Pierre LeBrun joining us on the Western Hotline, talking Sabres and Canadiens. You know, one of the big stories around here, Pierre, has been the emergence of Zach Benson, Josh Doan, the two of them together playing a lot in the Sabres forecheck. And for it really is, you know, Doan has been throughout the year. Benson has been good to great, and his game has taken a step forward here in the postseason.
Yeah, well, I don't know, like, why is everyone listed as a third line? I was fine after the game when you were up talking. Like, they kind of feel like the second line to me, don't you think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They were really impressive again last night. I thought they were the best line on the ice for either team. Benson just finds open ice and comes out of the corner of the puck all the time, and Doan has a nose for the net. And, you know, they got lucky on the opening goal, I guess, with Hudson tripping and falling, which you won't see very often, but you know what good players do is they capitalize on opportunities, and that's what they did in the opening goal.
Yeah, we're also, like you mentioned in Caulfield here, Tage Thompson's not scored since the first game of the series, and hasn't really been that big of a problem because of Doan and Benson, you know, picking it up. But with Tage and Tuck and Krebs a lot, like, this top line can get going, and I wonder what you thought about Tage's game in game one.
I thought he was, I noticed as the Boston series went on, he kind of faded a bit. I noticed him a lot more last night, and, so I think that he'll find a little more open ice against Montreal. He did against Boston, and I think the goals will come from. I noticed him for sure, didn't score, but I thought he was dangerous. I thought he imposed himself physically, too, and was a real handful for Montreal's defense, so. I would see that as progress and a positive sign if I were the Sabres.
We're seeing a lot of players that kind of step into big spots. And for the Sabres, he's done this before. He did it in Colorado, Bowen Byram. And there's almost like a moment watching Byram in this postseason where you almost ask yourself, like, how did this guy ever get traded?
You know, it's a great question. And I could see it coming even when they were winning a cup in 22. I remember during that series saying, you know, with Cale Makar taking up so much ice time offensively, I wonder where a guy like Bo Byram is going to be able to sort of take the next step in his career. And that's not to say the Avs couldn't have kept him. They certainly could have. But I really did feel he would get traded, and that's what happened. And it's funny because it's worked here in Buffalo certainly, you know, this year. But as you know, there have been some tense issues with Byron's camp and the Sabres over the last couple of years in terms of the contract and everything else. But he seems to have found a good place now for himself and his game. I mean, I thought he was dynamite last night, and that was a great shot.
Yeah, I think
on his power play goal. And it just goes to show you that as long as he's okay with quarterbacking a second power play unit, there is a role for Byron on the team where there's an absolute Norris Trophy candidate start ahead of him in Rasmus Dahlin. I mean, that was the issue in Colorado. It's, you know, can he coexist with having both a Kale McCarr and a Bill and Byron as far as the ice time allocation in those moments? And I think he's been able to make it work here. Deep down, I don't know, Jeremy, like, there's Byron maybe think he can be the number one guy in the team one day? Maybe, right? Who knows? I mean, you have to believe in yourself, and he's playing like he is a number one guy by the way he's playing, but not on this team. So it is a fascinating thing, and it brings me to my other point I was going to make about the Sabres, because, you know, I think a lot of people in Buffalo are later this morning, or they were last night, that the Sabres got two power play goals given their power play issues over the last month. But it should be noted, it's the second unit that scored both goals. Mm-hmm. So it's still, you know, you still want to see more from the Dahlin-Thompson unit. And Dahlin did have that beautiful breakaway on one of the power plays. But it's great that they scored two power play goals to relieve the pressure there, and Lemmy doesn't have to ask about it today. But on the other hand, it's the first unit that gets more of the opportunities, and they still have to get going.
Speaking with Pierre LeBrun on the Western Hotline, Pierre, on Byram, like, it's funny, like, as you say all that about being a number one, we had thought that was the case here. He wanted to be a true number one, went to an offseason thinking he was going to maybe get traded. They don't trade him. They sign him to a 2-year deal for modest money. Now there's a GM change, and, like, we'll see what Jarmo Kekalainen decides to do here. And I wonder what you think about, like, that the change. It is, of course, like, part of what happened this season is the GM change, and then all of a sudden everything changes on the ice. It's not really a typical thing that happens in the NHL. So, you know, what you know of Kekalainen, how his, I guess, leadership could translate on the ice, and really the spot that he finds himself in. He came in as an advisor. All of a sudden, he's the GM of a team that's up 1-0 in the second round, and, you know, he hasn't made monstrous moves. There's been an extension for Josh Doan, some deadline stuff. Like, where Jarmo finds himself has to be a bit of a thrill for him, I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's a pretty unique situation. I mean, I've covered the NHL for 31 years, and I don't know that I can think of a close comparable to what happened. I mean, you know, a lot of the pieces that are flourishing in the second half of the year or whenever they started taking off were pieces that Kevin Adams put together, right? Look, you have to call it for what it is. On the other hand, and I know Jarmo Kekalainen very well and covered a lot of his playoff series over the years in Columbus, including the one where they upset 6-2 in Tampa in 2019. I was there. Jarmo is such a team first philosophy guy in terms of everything it takes for players to find the best version of themselves to make a team win. And it's kind of a throwback thing in some ways, but, you know, people are going to say, well, I don't get it. What changed? I mean, it's not like you did the roster, but I think he immediately brought a certain level of know-how and how everyone should be operating day in and day out on and off the ice. I mean, it's a culture shift that's happening under Jarmo. And it's apparent from far away, let alone for those of you that see it every day. And so I think that's been the real positive change. And bringing on Mark Bergeron as well. And his experience, that's a pretty impactful 1-2 punch, I think, for the Sabres. Which, again, doesn't take away from, I think, the work that you recognize in retrospect that Kevin Adams left behind. I mean, two things can be true at once.
Yeah.
You know, which is why, you know, Kevin Adams heard from Vancouver for their GM search, although, you know, they've spoken to a lot of candidates. But I think certainly, you know, really positive thing. And, know, and the thing again about Yermo Kekalainen is that he wants to have players that truly understand the value of doing what it takes to find that next level and to be as unselfish as possible to see your team win, if that makes any sense. And that's harder and harder, honestly, in the modern game. I mean, listen, I have three kids who play rep hockey in Toronto. Like, the young generation, TikTok and everything else, I kind of touched on this in my piece today in The Athletic, but a lot of kids come up and game management isn't the greatest suit because they're influenced by what's flashy and, you know, skill plays and what makes the highlights. And what impressed me so much again last night is what the Sabres keep doing is learning how to close out a game, knowing that a two-goal lead is enough and you don't have to make a risky play to get another one. That is an unbelievable trait and development for the Buffalo Sabres.
Pierre LeBrun on the Western Outline. Pierre, thanks very much for the time. Enjoy the rest of the series.
I'm pretty sure I will. How could I not with these two fan bases? Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Pierre. Pierre LeBrun, TSN RDS hockey insider and senior NHL columnist for The Athletic. The hockey world is indeed here for this series. And Friday night, I'm so glad we're right back to like every other day. The two games in between, it's tough to take. And like today we talk about game one, tomorrow it's game two. Right back to it. Talk about it on Saturday, right back to it on Sunday. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Get more of your phone calls in, and we'll go back to the phones. Paul in Buffalo. Paul, good morning.
Oh, what a night. Welcome to the playoffs, Ryan McLeod. Thank you. No one's going to care if you hit anybody if you're on the score sheet. You were all over it, brother. Jeremy, there are a couple things I've never said. Like I've said a lot. We've said this. We dominate them with speed. We've done that to teams. We physically terrorized the Montreal Canadiens, and it just opened up so much space for a guy like McLeod to play. And you said there'd be more space for him in this series. You're absolutely right. And if Montreal is going to play SOFT soft hockey, they ain't got a prayer, because not only are we big and fast, we're good. Oh, man, what that was fun to watch. We had a couple, like, Montreal was very passive, and they don't have Jeremy Swayman in net like the Boston Bruins do to save their bacon. Dobesh gave all he had, I guess, against Tampa Bay, because he was not the same goalie he was against them. And we can run him Friday night. This was just master class. Rasmus Dahlin could have scored three goals last night. He's a little snake bitten, along with Jack Quinn, from just a goal-scoring standpoint. But I think he controls the game. Yeah, one bad giveaway in the first period, but other than that, thought he was brilliant and physical. That was a bogus obstruction call on him. He saw the call was made, so he put a cross check on that dude. I just love watching his game. He's so heady. Besides being brilliant, he knows how to play the game within the game, like Peyton Krebs, like Zach Benson, Alex Tuck on occasion. This team is just stacked everywhere. Look at the ice time of the defensemen. The third pair pulled down 18 and 19 minutes last night. You know, Dahlin only had to play 20. Bo Byram only had to play 20 minutes. That is just a talent we have, a repertoire of talent we have that, you know, Colorado doesn't have, Minnesota doesn't have. They got to play their guys 25-plus minutes. When we need it from Dahlin and Byram 25-plus, they can do it because they're not being wasted here. If Montreal wants to play soft hockey, this is going to be a quick series. But, I mean, I got to expect more from Cole Caulfield at some point has to score a goal, yeah. I would think. But what a game. They look brilliant, and they got more to give still.
Thanks,
Paul.
Have
a great show, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Yeah, the physicality of it just – I was listening to Chad, Expected Buffalo, said, like, it had all the intensity of a February game, like a division game and, you know, high stakes and a well-played game. But, yeah, the intensity was just not really there the same way it was maybe in the Boston series, and maybe Montreal-Tampa was a little intense, and this one kind of, I don't know, dialed back a bit. Yeah, the physicality, the room out there, a lot of yesterday's, you know, looking for responses, but I'm going through trying to find all the Montreal fans, writers, analysts, like, what do they think of their team's game? And they didn't love their team's game, but it was a little bit of a, okay, maybe the Sabres do present some challenges in a different way. The one I saw most recently was watching this game. Oh, if I can find who wrote this, but something along the lines of watching this game, was Tampa slow? Are the Lightning slow? And, I mean, I don't think we thought the Lightning were slow, but people talking about a Tampa matchup, you know, when we're deciding who do you want, Tampa or Montreal, nobody was afraid that Tampa was going to outskate the Sabres. Like, there are not many teams that are going to outskate this team in terms of just flat speed up and down the lineup. And when you can throw, you know, Alex Tuck speed on one line and McLeod speed on another line and the doggedness of Doan and Benson on another, like, you come in waves. And then, you know, the fourth line, Malenstein is the fastest skater in the NHL. He has the logged fastest speed ever. So, like, up and down the lineup, there's somebody right on you at all times. And, you know, Montreal, we'll see it. We'll see how they adjust. I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll get something in this series. But game one was a nice pedestrian job, well done. You can be even better. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. David in Cheektowaga. Hey, David.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Happy Saber Victory Day.
Happy Saber Victory Thursday.
Thursday. Yes. I like it, Jeremy. So listen, man, you know what? There's one thing that really bothered me about the game yesterday that really stuck out to me, and it is probably a positive really to the Sabres, and I think it'll keep giving them edge. I feel like if you watch that game and you weren't even a big hockey fan, you can't deny the fact that Buffalo seemed to just be out-skating, out-controlling, just out-battling almost every way Montreal. I know they had a few chances. They had some high-danger chances. I get that. But what I couldn't stand, and maybe it's my fault, I'm down the screener, I should have put Odyssey on and listened to Rob and our other gentleman there. Instead, I was listening to the national pundits, and we're in the second period. Sabres are scoring goals. We're in the third period. Sabres are scoring goals. And all I hear about is how great Dobish is and how great Montreal's players are and the one goal they got. That was an unbelievable goal on a breakaway. And I'm like, why aren't they talking about how dominant Buffalo is? Like, this is so annoying to me that we're just the cute Sabres. They broke their drought. Like, I'm so sick of that pundit. Like, I'm ready for a four-game or five-game victory in this series for people to say, holy crap, Buffalo is for real.
Yeah.
Like, I want them to dominate Montreal in every single game. I don't care if we drop one in Montreal. Let's win it in 4 or 5. Let's change the narrative that, hey, Buffalo's coming to punch you in the mouth. They're huge. They're fast. They're like Chicago when Chicago was on their run. Like, we are going to win, and we don't care what we have to do. We don't care who goes out of the lineup. It's next man up. Buffalo is sick of being the cute little kid in the corner. We're not that anymore. We are ready to take on everybody. I don't care who we play. We are losing, and I'm so sick of, like, no one recognizing that except for the local guys. Even Paul Bissonnette, he knows. I want to hear his big friggin' mouth to say, I'm a Buffalo 100%, dude. No, he's like, yeah, I'm there. I'm not like, he's like, it's wishy-washy about jumping on our train, man. Our wagon is rolling. It's a freight train wagon, and it is running over everybody. And I'm ready for this, dude. Like, it's been 15 years, and I was in the 99 Cups series as a kid, and the Dallas loss was shattering to me. Like, people think it was bad in 05, 06, and 06, 07. 99 was worse. So I'm ready to I want Carolina next round, and I know we're not there yet, but so I'll be at the game tomorrow night, and I cannot wait to unload this enthusiasm, this energy, and just give everything I got. Dobish, I'm sitting behind you, buddy, and we will be yelling your name the whole game. I'm so excited. I'm sorry for being too emotional, guys. Wow. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Thanks, David. Playoff hockey. He'll be there Friday. Remember what I said? I said I think Friday's going to be a little more intense.
There you go.
Exhibit A.
Let's go.
I think tomorrow will be a little more intense.
Holy crap.
Than last night was.
Now this day in between feels too long.
I know.
Seriously.
I know. I will say like to the response, when you are a feel-good story like the Sabres are, breaking their drought. Let's be real. Let's make a comparison. If the Jets made the playoffs this year, I mean, the Jets have been a joke of a franchise. They had the New York Jets, longest drought in all of sports. You'd be like, you know, good for them. Good for them. You wouldn't, it'd be impossible not to kind of feel a little bit of that. And they would fight the idea like, oh, that's just some cute story. The Bills were that when they broke their drought. and then, you know, got better, even better. So I tend to agree. There's a little bit of this is a nice story more than this team really could win it. And one spot that I go to for that is Dom Lecision of The Athletic. He's got his updated odds on, like, who could win the Stanley Cup. And it before Tampa lost, I kind of had this thought of, like, why does Tampa get, you know, in the East, get 60% of the chance and the Sabres are at 2? I don't think these teams are that far apart. And then Tampa lost. And the updated odds, like, I'll just give it to you here. Like, there are 8 teams left. And his chance to win the Stanley Cup, Colorado, 41. Carolina, 30. The Sabres are in third with 7% of 7% chance. You know, like, he's got his own model. And to me, it's just the nature of you do have a team that's not exactly perfect. They haven't been here 4 or 5 times. You get what you get. The infectious nature of this feeling is that it's year one. If this were year 5 and they'd gone out in this round every year the last 4 years, like, you know, the Bills had that little wall they hit, the playoffs feel different. Now it's, all right, game one, congratulations, I've seen it before, you got to go farther. So I think it's just the nature of, like, the infectious first time in a while, we're going to be viewed as cute, fun, feel good. And, it, you know, as the team keeps stacking wins, I think they'll earn that. If they beat Montreal and come out of the Atlantic as a division champ, and then it's you're in the Final Four with Carolina, Colorado, and Vegas, if that's what it ends up being, like, I think you get taken seriously as soon as you get there. And, you know, maybe through this series as well. Because beating Montreal, you want to talk about getting credibility? Like, all, the eyes on this series are the eyes of the insiders in hockey. I know they watch all the games. But, you know, Vegas Anaheim is not going to do the same number that this series is going to do. This is the one to watch. There were the 2 teams, big passionate fan bases. Everybody's watching. Everybody's keyed in. So if you're mad that they're a feel-good story, I get it. I think it's kind of unavoidable given the road that it's taken to get here. A turnaround in season with very few changes. And all of a sudden, I've got household names of guys that are 5'10", that are little scrappy-do bulldogs being compared to Brand Marchand and having Boston crash out. Like, I've got a lot of good storylines, so I don't necessarily want to push those aside. But thanks for the phone call, and bring that energy tomorrow night. Thanks, David. 803-0550. We're wide open for your calls. Wide open. So jump in, 803-0550, here on WGR.
Sort of, we've got to stop meeting like this, but I don't want to stop meeting like this.
No.
I want to keep meeting like this. Because EJ Raddick.
I want to meet like this for the first time in a very long time, is what I want to do.
Has come from the top rope to become a regular here in this incredible Sabre season, and we're very happy about it. EJ is, of course, I want to say, with NHL Network. You know that. NHL Tonight, first shift, weekdays at 4 Eastern. Throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs, which we know Bulldog are still going.
Yes, they are.
Hi, EJ.
Hello there.
Bulldog is back.
I was very pleased to hear that Mike enjoyed the visits he had with you. I was sorry that I was not available for either one, but I'm glad to be here now, and hopefully this will be rectified moving forward.
Well, we you know, things have been going well, so hopefully there's not going to be a change right. in the plan here.
Right, right.
Let's go back to the Sabres win over Boston, EJ. Were you ever nervous for them?
Well, you're always nervous in a 7-game series, especially, you know, you lose the second game, right, on home ice after that kind of crazy first game, and they haven't been in the playoffs in a long time. So you don't know how they're going to respond, but I think I probably said in one of my previous appearances, I just felt against Boston, they were the better team, and if they played the way they can play, they would win, and that's exactly what happened. So. You know, but there's always nerves. I mean, even, you know, you get a nice win over Montreal last night, but you know, Montreal's a good team. They'll figure out something. It's going to be a hard series.
Yeah, I mean, I think both teams very much to me after last night, EJ, sounded like, you know, we know we got more in there. Marty St. Louis was talking about how his big guys had more room than they were used to from the Tampa series, which, I don't know, maybe there's a little gamesmanship in there, hoping to get the Sabres to change something, I don't know. And Lindy Ruff said, like, we definitely have better. And I would agree as an objective observer. I watched Montreal probably 20 or 30 times this year. Whenever the Sabres weren't playing and they were on, they were my go-to because they were a blast to watch. So I think this series should be really, really fun, fast, and skilled.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think the advantage that Buffalo has, I think they have a little bit more size, maybe a little bit more size on the blue line, and they're you know, the difference between playing Tampa and playing Buffalo right now is that Tampa's blue line isn't near as active. And they, quite frankly, not near as so, you know, that's going to be a challenge for Montreal moving forward. Alex Lyon has played very well in goal. I'm really thrilled for him as a young guy that has, you know, kind of looked to find his way with different teams over several years. He had that run with Florida at the end of the regular season a couple of years ago that propelled them into the playoffs. And then we know the story from there. Right. So, really happy for Alex Lyon. He's playing well. And, you know, again, as I've said before, happy for everybody up in Buffalo. Like the last 18 months, I couldn't figure out why the team wasn't playing better. Their personnel was certainly there, but they figured it out. And, you know, who knows where this is going to end up? This is a very interesting spring.
EJ, let's stay on Lyon for another minute. You know this, I'm sure, from just covering sports for so long. We talked about, was it yesterday, Bulldog, when we got into this a little bit, how you don't necessarily know how good a guy can be when he enters the league. He's not drafted. He played at Yale. He goes to Philadelphia and then maybe Carolina and Detroit and Florida. And he as his career is going along, he's not playing very much. He's playing in the American League. And it's just like until you find out from putting him in the net for some serious amount of games, you don't necessarily know what he can't do. And so he was never anybody's baby, you know, Lyon.
Right.
And yep. And here he ends up splitting time. He carves out that much of a role at least. Then Lukanen glitches in the first round, and here we are. So you always want to remember that about sports. Like, just because somebody wasn't drafted doesn't mean they can't do it.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, just because someone doesn't start a playoff year doesn't mean they might not finish it. I mean, I can remember – you go with the Hurricanes all the way back in 06. They started with, I think it was Gerber, and he was out after two games, and they had lost both games, and then they went to Cam Ward, and, you know, again, the rest is history. He went on a run, and they won the Stanley Cup. So you just never know how it's going to play out. Like I say, I'm really happy for Alex just because you pointed it out. I mean, he was a journeyman. He was kind of a minor league goalie, and even when he had that run in Florida, it was kind of surprising. And, you know, but since then, every place he's kind of turned up, I think he's played well and gotten better. And now he's just found himself in a position in Buffalo behind a really good team right now. So I think it's just all come together for both the team and the goalie.
Yeah. You know, when we were talking about this the other day, the goalies in particular, I said because of Lyon's background, I feel like that is the spot that people from the outside and even in here, inside in Buffalo, like Sabres fans, might be waiting for him to turn into a pumpkin because he mostly has been that in his career. He's had the couple of chances to have the number one job, and it kind of just got away from him, and so he moved on to someplace else. And it doesn't have to be, you know, like the story isn't written, you know, entirely yet, and he's doing a great job. And listening to him talk about playing the position and the anxiety and the nerves and having to make friends with that. He's a very interesting guy. I mean, goalies often can be, you know, characters. And I don't know that that's necessarily the word I'd want to put on Lyon, but he's a really fascinating guy to listen to talk about how he goes about his job.
Yeah, I mean, I think the goalies in general, that's why a lot of them have gone into media over the years. I think they're interested. We had Scott Wedgwood on our show the other day, and it's a similar story, right? A career backup. He was almost out of hockey, and, you know, now he's the starting goalie and kind of a tandem situation where he's there with Mackenzie Blackwood in Colorado. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. I mean, that's the beauty for Lindy Ruff is that if things don't go well with Lyon and he feels he can make a change, he could go back to Lukanen, and, you know, that's the way it's been all year. So why not follow the same course? And if Lyon's playing well, just keep him in there. And if he struggles and you think you need a change, you can bring Lukanen back in, and I'm sure he would play well. That's been what they've done all year.
With EJ Raddick, by the way, on goalies, what's your opinion of Frederik Andersen? I've never been one to sort of assume that playoff hockey is so different that a guy just, you know, a switch gets flipped and they just can't do it or whatever. I'm never surprised to see a guy who's had a good career do well. But how easy is his life in that net?
Well, listen, you got to have players in front of you. That's the first thing, right? You got to have a team that's defending in front of you, and then, you know, you got to be feeling it. And, you know, Freddie, you know, we go all the way back to when he was with Anaheim. He came into the league and he was part of a duo with a very young John Gibson. And, you know, they had some successful runs there. He went to Toronto. And, like, he's just never been a guy that in that big moment in the playoffs has made the – is really – you know, when they really needed it, made the big save. And he's given up those – he's given up some weak goals. He's had injuries. But his career has been generally good.
Yep.
When you think about it. He's a big guy, and he's had a lot of good regular seasons. And, you know, I just think about, like, the start of this playoffs, guys. I'll be honest, and I said it on a show. I said it probably every day that we've talked about Freddie Anderson. I would have started the other guy because – Freddie has not had that history of being a guy that can take a team and go on a long run. But, you know, Rod Brindamore, to his credit, he started Freddie. Now, Freddie missed a lot of time this year, too, due to injury. So maybe that rest has helped him and set him up for this. But he's been brilliant so far in these, you know, they've won all six games they played. They swept Ottawa. It was a, you know, had a lot of, it got a good chances in that series. And Freddie Anderson was terrific. His numbers are near perfect. And even the other night against Philly, gave up two early ones, didn't give up another one. They got outplayed in overtime. He had to make, I think, 12 saves.
Yep.
So for Freddie Anderson, he's trying to write like that final chapter you need in a career where it's been a good career. If he were to be able to backstop Carolina on a long run and get him to the finals and play well in the final, even if they don't win per se, I think that would change. It would certainly change my opinion, and I think it would change the narrative a little bit around Freddie, which has been that in the big moment, he either comes up with an injury or he comes up a little short. But he's been excellent through these first six games this year.
Back to the Sabres. I hope to get back to these other series, too, if we have the time here. But I just want to ask you, EJ, what your sense is of how, I don't know, how cool a story, how big a story within the league is it that the Sabres are back? Like,
it's a monster.
Yeah, okay.
It's a monster story because, I mean, for the last 15 years, every year we go through the Stanley Cup playoff ratings and, like, you know, the Buffalo area is always the highest. People are paying attention to hockey in Buffalo. They love their hockey there. It's a great hockey city. And, you know, the fact that this team has been out for so long is really, it's just, as someone who covers the league and covers the game, I mean, I'm rooting for good stories all the time. And, you know, they care about hockey there. As you guys know, you live it every day. The people that are listening to this right now, they care about hockey. And, you know, the team hasn't been good. There's been a lot of negative stories. And for the team to respond this year and be as good as they are, because as I've said to you before on the show, I mean, top four D as good as any top four D in the league. Yeah. I don't care who you're talking about. You know, you go down the middle in the centers when Norris is right. You got Thompson, Norris, McLeod, 1-2-3. You could get Carrick there as a four. I mean, that's really deep through the middle, and that's the spine of your team. And, you know, and then they've got Luukkonen and Lyon playing well in goal. So, you know, this is a really good team, and I think it's a great story, and it's only going to get bigger and better as they go. And if they can knock off Montreal and get into, I guess, a 2006 conference final rematch with Carolina, because Carolina looks like they're moving forward. You know, that'd be a hell of a series too. But I guess there's a lot to happen between now and then. But it's been a great story.
A few minutes left with EJ Raddick of NHL Network, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. One of those top four defensemen is a finalist for the Norris Trophy. The Sabres have never sniffed the Norris Trophy, but here is Dahlin in a pretty good position. How do you like his chances of winning?
I think they're pretty good. I mean, the team has played really well. They've gotten a lot of attention. I mean, the Hockey Writers Association votes for this particular award. They vote for a couple of them, and this is one of them. And you get writers from all over North America, from the different teams, different media outlets that vote for it. And, you know, when a team gets more attention, you know, look, he's a finalist. Now, Cale Makar, I think, is generally thought to be the very best defenseman in hockey. But, you know, I think Zach Werenski is another guy that got a lot of attention this year. The Blue Jackets had a strong finish to the season, although they kind of wilted at the end.
but there was a lot of attention on the Olympics. There was a lot of attention on Werenski in that venue as well. Yep. So, I mean, I'll be curious to see what the voting comes out. I mean, it's really tough because we have so many really talented defensemen right now. To think that Quinn Hughes wasn't a finalist, to think that Evan Bouchard, who had the most points among defensemen, was a plus player and also improved his defensive game, that he wasn't a finalist. I mean, there are those who watch the Islanders and young Matthew Schaefer. They might say he could have been a finalist. So, I mean, there's a lot of really talented young defensemen in the game right now. But I've always been a fan of Rasmus Dahlin, and I like the edginess that he brings to the table as well, his physical game. And I'll be curious to see how it plays out. I mean, at the end, I always say I'm not huge on – like, I haven't voted for these in a long time. When you work with the NHL Network, they don't have you vote, which is fine because I don't really want to. I believe this is a one-trophy league. And so if Rasmus Dahlin is holding that big trophy that they give out after the last game, I think he'll be pretty happy even if he doesn't win the Norris.
I suppose. I guess that's right, Bulldog. What do you think? You agree with that?
Yeah, I also would rather the Sabres win the Stanley Cup than Rasmus Dahlin win the Norris Trophy. Yes,
imagine someone asking Dahlin and he doesn't say that.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the Cup would be fine, but.
I always wanted to win the Norris. The Cup,
Forecheck, backcheck, paycheck. Listen, this is.
There you go.
This is why we're here.
So really, as a guy who's been with a bunch of different teams, I'm kind of like an amorphous blob to a degree, where I can fit in different situations and adapt to the circumstances, and that's what I try to do, and I think that's where my value lies.
Sabres goaltender Alex Lyon, and his way with words. He has been phenomenal in the playoffs. Started 5 games, has won 4 of them. 950 save percentage, 1.3 goals against. He has truly, I think, been exceptional for this team, and it's a little surprising based on how the season ended. I think most would have assumed Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen would have had the net much longer than just the 2 games, and now I think we've hit a point. I just don't know what it will take for Lyon to ultimately relinquish that net. He's been playing so, so well. For more on the Stanley Cup playoffs, Sabres Montreal, and across the rest of the league, we go to the Western Hotline as Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer, at ESPN, joins the show. Greg, good morning. How are we doing today?
Doing well. Was in Philly last night for that debacle. just chugging along in what's been a pretty interesting and unpredictable Stanley Cup playoffs so far.
I did want to ask you about that because I saw your tweets last night that you were in Philadelphia. I mean, we here in Buffalo, we're in some ways looking ahead a little bit, but it's hard not to when you do see Carolina playing Philly and immediately jump out to that 2-0 series lead, and now it's 3-0, and wondering, are they really going to have 9 days of rest for the eventual winner of Buffalo-Montreal? And it is looking like it's going to be the case.
It's entirely possible. I saw Eric Tolsky, their GM, after the game last night, and I was saying to him, "Should you book a vacation, in the 9 days you might have between? Could you hit up Bora Bora for a week before the conference final?" But the Hurricanes are legit. I said before the playoffs that this is the deepest offensive group that Rod Brind'Amour has had as head coach there. They chased big name players for a while, guys like Jake Guentzel and guys like Mikko Rantanen. And at the end of the day, the strength of this team has always been their depth, their ability to roll lines. And now you've got 3 different lines you've got to worry about on this team offensively, which is something that you don't normally have to deal with the Carolina Hurricanes. And then, on top of that, you still have their penalty kill, which is the best in the world, and Jacob Slavin saving goals from the goal line with a stick, and Freddie Anderson playing really, really well. So they're, not looking past Montreal at all in any way, shape, or form at this point if you're Buffalo. But if you're looking ahead at Carolina, they are as good as we've seen them be as a team under Brind'Amour.
The Freddie Anderson stuff is also, it may be the most frustrating thing, is somebody that like does not want Carolina to win, right? That the pains of 06 are still there. But, he also was not really, I guess, the story for Carolina in terms of net for most of the season. It's Brandon Bussey, kind of same with the Sabres, where Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen really kind of took the net late in the year. But now all of a sudden in the playoffs, it's Lyon, and then for Carolina, it's Anderson.
Yeah, exactly. And in both Lyon and Anderson's cases, there have definitely been times in the past, in Freddie's case, it's usually health. And in Lyon's case, it's just kind of the riding the roller coaster of being – you know, looking like the best goalie in the world for 3 weeks and then kind of regressing where they've not gotten, you know, this far, this hot. But in both cases, they've looked great. By the way, I'm a true believer that if Buffalo's defense was healthy in 06, they would have probably won the cup that year. But that's a discussion for another time.
Thanks. I hate it. Greg, though, speaking of things, though, that aren't things that I despise, like the Hurricanes, moving on a little bit here to Buffalo-Montreal, it is a series that a lot of people expect this to be a little bit more tightly contested, obviously compared to Carolina-Philly, but also just because of the quality of these two teams. And to bring back a meme that you brought up on Wednesday, they're scoring power play goals now?
Yeah, it's kind of scary. I mean, that was sort of the Achilles heel in the Boston series was their inability to really convert the chances they had on special teams, and now all of a sudden they're pumping in power play goals. I think Buffalo's advantage in the series was pretty obvious, which is that they've got, I think, more quality depth than Montreal does. And, you know, while they lack maybe the tippy top guys that the Lightning have, I think they have better overall depth than the Lightning do as well. They play with some physicality. You know, they're obviously getting great goaltending and certainly have a knack for agitation, which I think is also important against this Montreal team. So it's not the best matchup for the Canadiens. I think this Buffalo team and based on the results that we saw in the first game, I mean, it's certainly, you have to feel pretty confident about the Sabres right now.
You mentioned the penchant for a little bit of irritation, Zach Benson. He couldn't have gotten off to a better start in game one there. He draws a penalty on his first shift. He helps them get the first goal on a really nice fake shot and pass. But then later in the game, there's Zach Benson laughing at Zach Bolduc, who's like at least half a foot taller than him. And it's still, you see Zach Benson smiling, grinning, and laughing through it all. But it's interesting to see possibly the birth of a villain in this postseason being Zach Benson.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you need that element to win in the playoffs. I mean, one of the real tricks to the Florida Panthers becoming the Florida Panthers was having like seven of those guys and they're all right. Part of their core, right? Like, I mean, that's kind of how the Panthers became the Panthers. Benson's great. And actually, one of the things that I found really impressive about Buffalo in the last couple of games, I was very concerned that the line with Benson and Doan was going to have a significant downtick with Norris in the middle. Like, they had really kind of unlocked something there with Noah Östlund, and it was a real bummer when that guy got hurt, because I think it was really kind of coming together as a dominant line. But, you know, the drop off hasn't been hugely significant. They're still playing pretty well with Norris in the middle, and obviously Benson's been a real big part of that.
Doan and Benson both with 5 points through seven games. Norris, though, just the one empty net goal in four games played so far in this postseason. Greg, one thing I know that was talked about a lot going into this series was, of course, Montreal, the top-end talent that they have. I don't think there's any question about how good they are at the top of things, but it should be noted, and it was after the Tampa series and then, of course, continuing into game one of the Sabres series, they are very dependent, at least to start this postseason, on the power play, and at least 5-on-5. I think Suzuki is the only one that has points between him, Slafkovský, and Caulfield.
Yeah, and the high-end guys kind of need to pick it up a little bit. You could make the argument that when you're going up against the Anthony Cirellis and the Brandon Hagels of the world in the Lightning series, that may give you at least a little bit of plausible deniability as to why you aren't producing at 5-on-5 more if you're like someone like Cole Caulfield. But it's continued on into at least through the first game of this series. And look, you know, one of the things that Montreal is going to have to deal with is that some of their best players are not exactly Tage Thompson when it comes to size and strength. Like Cole Caulfield is diminutive to the point where, you know, Bill Guerin decided he didn't want to take him to Milan in the Olympics because of that lack of size. Ditto Lane Hudson on the back end, who's a brilliant offensive defenseman, but you could probably fit him in your pocket. So like, this is kind of an issue for a team, especially in the Eastern Conference, where there's teams built to check and bang and play with size, where, you know, Montreal's best players aren't exactly. And so it's going to be interesting to kind of see how they adapt to that and whether they can kind of recapture the magic of the regular season in the playoffs, because it does kind of become a different sport.
One of the adjustments, though, Greg, it helped them through the first round. I was wary of line four with Balduke, Tessier, and Doc, and Kirby Doc probably scores, as of right now, probably the most impressive-looking goal of the playoffs. But that fourth line is something that Montreal is able to adapt with because they do have the crash-and-bang style that the playoffs dictate, but there is some top-end talent there. I mean, Tessier and Doc are both former first-round picks. Doc, formerly third overall, and it does look like that's the group that's trying to become Montreal's unlikely heroes right now.
Yeah, the sons of Corey Perry, right? Like, yes. Like elite offensive talent that kind of find their role down the lineup in more of a checking mode. But again, it just speaks to the kind of player and the kind of effort that you need to break through in the postseason. And, you know, they're not the first team to look down the lineup and see their depth lines being the ones that have the best results, whether it's offensively or just gaining zone time, because they're built that way to play a playoff style. And then you look up the lineup and they're not getting the same kind of results from the players that you need to depend on in order to win a series like this. And that's sort of the trick right now. It's like, how do you get those top end guys to be as effective as the grunts?
Greg Rusinski here on the Wester Hotline. Greg, I also want to get your thoughts before we go around the rest of the league and kind of see some of these other series going on, because I do want to get your thoughts on Colorado, Minnesota, and what's going on there. But Jakub Dobesz, he came in off of a spectacular performance in Game 7 against Tampa Bay. I still simply have no idea how they won that game, having only nine shots. It is what it is. It is hockey. But then, I don't even want to say I blame it. Even majority of those goals on Dobesz. I think the Sabres played very well in terms of screening him, and then I thought there was a lot of defensive breakdowns by Montreal. But ultimately letting in four goals on only eight shots, not great for Dobesz. But what have you seen so far in these playoffs from him?
I'll never forget the in-game interview that John Cooper gave during that game between the Lightning and the Canadiens. I've never seen a coach happier with his team's effort, despite, I think at that point, trailing in the game. And it just kind of felt inevitable that they were going to win just based on how well they were playing. Yeah. And then obviously Dobesz kind of just shut the door to the shock of everything. I think he's playing great. I mean, he seems to be a rookie that plays with poise. He obviously has the full faith of the team in front of him. And if they lose this series, I'd be really shocked if it ends up being because of their goaltending, just by how well he's playing. I think what we're kind of talking around is the idea that he might need to steal one against the Sabres, much like he stole the definitive game of the previous series. And we'll see if he has that in him when you're facing, you know, waves of attack by a really deep offensive team like Buffalo.
Well, at least for Sabres fans, we did experience that in the first round series with Boston. I mean, Swayman does steal game five ultimately. I mean, Boston could not score by the end of that series, and yet he holds them down to one goal. So it's not like it'd be a new issue for the Sabres to deal with. But yeah, I was very curious on Dobesz.
I think obviously the key is Dobesz has to like tear into his teammates on camera on the bench, and then he'll come back and have a really strong game like Swayman did.
Greg, last one here on the Sabres from me before we can go around the league here, but this is also kind of around the league, so it's a perfect tie-in. Rasmus Dahlin, one of the finalists for the Norris Trophy this season, and last year he finishes sixth amongst voters. I do wonder if there's going to be more than a solid case. I mean, obviously you're not a finalist for no reason. With Cal Makar and Zach Werenski there. Finally, it looks like the shine on Dahlin's game was able to be, you know, given the spotlight that you predicted at the beginning of the season. So, first of all, take your flowers. And second of all, what do you think the chances are that it's not just as a finalist and that he might even win the trophy this year?
Oh, don't worry. I sprained my elbow patting myself on the back. Rasmus Dahlin is a Norris finalist prediction, right? I was actually really surprised. We do an NHL awards watch on ESPN.com every month where we ask the actual voters for what their current ballots are. And the last one we did, it was Evan Bouchard of the Edmonton Oilers as the third guy, along with Makar and Werenski, a guy who led the league in points amongst defensemen with 95. I mean, it looked like it was trending for him to be the third guy. So I was pleasantly surprised when it was Dahlin, because I do think he deserves it more than Bouchard does and more than Quinn Hughes does because of the totality of his game. I mean, he's stepped up offensively. I think his reputation has been really forged this year as a guy who takes care of business in his own end physically, and certainly has gotten under the skin of a lot of opponents as well in the way that he plays. So I was really happy to see his season acknowledged for how good it's been. I mean, you know, he's got the Masterton nomination for all of the off-ice stuff that he went through, but obviously that's in the back of your mind too when you think about him getting a Norris nomination. And it's just great to see a guy, you know, who's been steadily getting better as his career has progressed, get recognized for it.
To get us to Colorado and Minnesota, do you think this is Makar's year, though, again, to get his third Norris of his career?
No, I think it's Werenski's year. Okay. I do. Like, he finished second last year. You know, he led his team in scoring. He's clearly the driver of play for the Blue Jackets. At the time of the voting, the Blue Jackets were right in the playoff mix. Ultimately, they fall short. Makar's season was good, but it wasn't, like, good by his standards. Mm-hmm. I mean, his points per game, I think, was around maybe fifth or sixth for his, like, career. And, you know, there's always going to be, and I think Bouchard is a victim of this too, this idea of, like, okay, well, how many of your points are because you're on the ice when McKinnon's there? Just like how many of your points are because you're on the same power play as McDavid and Draisaitl. And in Werenski's case, obviously, he doesn't necessarily have any of that talent around him in Columbus. So the Norris has a funny way of being like, it's your turn now kind of award, yeah. Right? And I feel like it might be Werenski's turn this year.
We were talking about that, and that's where I wondered about Dahlin. And mainly my big takeaway with Werenski was his team did make the playoffs, right? They do falter late, and they ultimately miss out, and Dahlin kind of has finally his moment in the sun. But Werenski, I think, is also a very good shout. Oh, Makar, like, we're also thinking about in NFL terms where, you know, there was a big conversation, Greg, when Josh Allen was going to win his MVP or Lamar Jackson. It was, are we really going to give three MVPs already to Lamar Jackson? Are we sure we want to put him in that kind of category with the Mannings and the Rodgers of the world? You know, let's give it to Josh. I wonder if it's sort of the same thing with Makar. Are we really going to give him three already?
I think I think it's more about the voters kind of like looking at performances within the context of careers. Like, the idea that Nick Lidstrom ever didn't win the Norris is insane because he was always the best defenseman in the world. But mm-hmm. there were some seasons where his numbers or his plus minus weren't as good as they were in previous years. Same with Patrice Bergeron and the Selke. Like, there'd be some years where maybe his stats were just a tick below what his standard should be. And so, like, you know, much like good teams always use the cliche of, like, our biggest competition is ourselves. I think that is the case for a guy like Makar, who's like a generational talent, is kind of, if your performance is better than everybody else, but it's not as good as what we know you can do, that might actually, you know, cost him some award votes.
Speaking of not as good as we know you can do, Colorado for a little while there, the second half of the season, they were not the fire hose that they were early on. they played a little bit around with the Kings the first few games. By the end of it, they were comfortable. Greg, now that they're playing Minnesota, apparently they're going to light up the scoreboard. Every one of their games, it just feels like you can't take your eyes off the screen. They're up 2-0, and that feels exactly right.
First of all, the fire hose reference makes me immediately think of the Weird Al Yankovic classic film UHF, in which they had children drink from the fire hose in a classic bit. You know, they're fine now. Like, I think they might have been dealing with some injuries down the stretch as well, and their depth is insane. I mean, like, there was always going to be this inherent flaw in the construction of the Minnesota Wild in that they didn't have enough center depth to deal with a team like Colorado. But, like, without having Joel Eriksson Ek there for the first two games because of injury, it just gets laid bare that team's a complete donut. And when you're going up against McKinnon and Brock Nelson and Nazem Kadri and Nick Waugh, and that's your top four, like, outside of Florida when they're healthy, there's no one that even comes close to what the center depth that the Avalanche have. And, you know, they flexed all over them, you know, in those first couple games in Denver, and we'll see where the series goes. But I think the real story for me right now is that if you're the Minnesota Wild, you don't really have confidence in either of your goalies right now, which has not been the case throughout the entire regular season. I think John Hines made a huge tactical error not getting Philip Gustafson in game one to give him some reps. He hadn't played since early April. And, you know, you're basically sitting on your hands for a month. And, oh, by the way, now you're being thrown into game two against a juggernaut, right? Like, I think that was just such a bad decision, and it manifested in a pretty mediocre goaltending performance in game two.
Hopefully Minnesota is able to stabilize and at least make that a series, because that's the one in the Western Conference that everyone looked at as, all right, this is going to be probably your Western Conference winner, because now you're looking over at Vegas and Anaheim. First of all, possibly an eyesore watching that uniform combination out there. That might be me. I don't know your take on that. But Colorado, though, looks like they're on a different level, and it's almost as if like you're looking at Vegas and Anaheim and going, well, I hope you guys can enjoy this because the buzzsaw might be coming up next for one of those two teams.
You guys just are trying to avoid the inevitable Jack Eichel takes on the Buffalo Sabres for the Stanley Cup Series. Come on, you know
we,
that.
We like the old Adams Division
Greg,
idea.
Greg,
that's the one we like.
Don't get me started on ideas of hatred because I'm a hater and I will be forever. I can't even bear the possibility of seeing the Carolina Hurricanes in the Eastern Conference Final, so that's a step I can't even think about yet.
But isn't that the hero's journey? Isn't that the commemorative DVD journey for the Buffalo Sabres, is to take out the Carolina Hurricanes, the stolen valor champion of 2006, and then take on Jack Eichel as the final boss to try to win the cup?
Like, I've tried dealing with that with the story. Chiefs, Greg, with the Bills. No, I don't want it anymore.
Someone has got to do it. I like that idea.
Someone else take care of it.
I'm concerned for Vegas and Eichel right now. Like, I think that the Ducks played two of their best defensive games in the first two games of that series, and that was obviously like the fatal flaw of that team, was an inability to play defense at a championship level. I think they've kind of figured out that the best defense is just hold on to the puck and keep it out of your own zone. And they did that really well, especially in the second period of game two against Vegas. So we're 1-1. The thing that gives me pause about the Ducks is that Vegas did show that they can get better as a series goes on. They certainly did that against the Mammoth. But you know, the Ducks are fast and they're playing confidently, and there are some guys that are really misfiring on the Golden Knights right now. One of them being Tomas Hertl, who's been a non-factor in these playoffs. So we'll see where it all heads. But, if you're Anaheim, you have to be pretty confident about the first two games of the series and the way that it's trended.
Greg, I want to get your thoughts on, because we're on Vegas now, but Mitch Marner. I mean, everything going on with Toronto notwithstanding, the Marner stuff was always curious because it seemed like he would leave Toronto and all of a sudden become a big game performer, right? Like, the playoff bugaboos seemingly only sat with Toronto, and now, as we sit here in eight games, he's got 9 points through these playoffs. Does he look like a different player, or is this more just luck of the draws with Eichel and it just seems to be working out?
No, he's just comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the pressure of playing in that market is insane. And especially when you've been identified as this postseason pariah, despite the fact that there are so many other players in the team that don't play well in the postseason spotlight either. I think it impacted his game. He was a very peripheral player in Toronto. And I think in Vegas, he's gotten more into the dirty areas. Like, he's playing a little bit more aggressively offensively while still being one of the best defensive forwards in the league. It was inevitable this was going to happen when you get out of that market and you can exhale a little bit. And instead of having 105 television cameras in your face after every playoff loss, it's like six guys. Like, that's just how it's going to be for him. And it might be the same way for Matthews if he decides to leave, you know, just getting out of that pressure cooker and going someplace where you can be a little bit more anonymous and not have the weight of the world on your shoulders and not have to think about how, you know, your franchise hasn't won a cup since, you know, 1967. Like, it all adds up to a lot of pressure on these guys when they're in that market and playing in the playoffs.
Oh yeah. Perfect amount of pressure for an 18-year-old kid, like maybe Gavin McKenna.
Well, I mean, now it's a fresh start, right? I mean, new GM, first overall pick. I mean, the Matthews thing's really interesting. I did some reporting on that this week, and it's real. I mean, the idea that he's still contemplating what he wants to do for next season is very real. The winning the draft lottery didn't materially change things for Matthews. It could be a situation where he waits until July to really figure out if he's out or if he wants to come back and give it a go. The new regime is going to have to sell him on a vision, you know, short term and long term. But, you know, just like Connor McDavid last year, I mean, Matthews holds all the cards and could easily just be like, I think that maybe it's in your best interest to trade me now because I'm not going to come back and re-sign in 2028.
Greg, thanks so much for jumping on with us this morning. Before you go, let everyone know where they can find your work.
You can find it on ESPN.com. I also do a podcast with my longtime friend Jeff Merrick twice a week on his show, The Sheet. Yesterday we had Pat Brisson on, super agent, to talk about the possibility of Quinn Hughes and Jack Hughes both becoming free agents in 2030. Mm. And as a Devils fan, I don't like that, but it could definitely happen.
It could definitely happen. Yeah. Greg, again, thanks so much for jumping on with us. Enjoy the games tonight.
Anytime. Thanks.
That was Greg Wyshynski there on the Western Hotline, the senior NHL writer at ESPN. I'm glad we got to the Toronto stuff too, because it's the Marner thing. It's quietly in the periphery. I'm just looking at some of the statistics. I've watched a little bit of Vegas when they've been in the playoffs, because those are obviously the much later games, and we're getting up here in the morning, and it does not matter until we would potentially face them in a cup final. But yeah, the Marner stuff when he's in with Team Canada, and all of a sudden he has big time moments for them, and now with Vegas he has 9 points in 8 games, 3 goals, and you're sitting there just going like, Toronto, it might be you. You might be the problem right now.
That also came on the heels, though, of that very aggressive question from like the Toronto reporter Steve Simmons with John Chayka there. Oh, he's a con artist. And it's like, he's sitting right there.
So good. He might be all those things, but he's sitting right there.
I guess I respect a man for throwing insults right at a man's face. There's no paper trail, but...
Yeah, that's right.
But at the same time... He's sitting right there. A little bit of, like, just be a little more cordial with it, I guess. But
a little professional decorum. Goes a long way.
It's not like Keith Pelley didn't deserve aggressive questioning, but it's John Chayka's probably just sitting there like, right here, man.
Right.
Like, what are we doing? But, yeah, no, maybe it is a Toronto thing. Maybe it is maybe it is the media pressure that is there.
Don't act like you've won a cup every other year, and the last time you won was 67. But it might go a long way for you.
And it's rich of us here in Buffalo to, you know, speak on such a thing of winning a championship or the decorum that has to be following that sort of thing.
I don't think ever had players complain about how the media treats them and how they feel like the weight of the world is on their shoulders. Allen and McDermott want to win one for the city of Buffalo because they love it here, or they loved it here because McDermott has moved on. But
I mean, we did have a reporter calling Reinhardt utterly bratty.
Brady, but then crying because he couldn't get it done here, you know, with Kevin Adams. Yeah. There is some to that of when you make unrealistic expectations and the pressure mounts on people, it affects games. And we're seeing it constantly with Maple Leafs that leave Toronto, even for just international games.
And it's also like you see the players these days with the amount of autonomy they have. And I do wonder about it. I really do, of just how much it is. Toronto's becoming more of a potential annoyance.
Yeah, rather than like, oh, I'd love to play there. Like, it's a premier destination. Instead, it becomes a, I'd rather not.
Now for John Tavares, there's a Mitch Marner, a homegrown kid that effectively got bullied out of Toronto.
Mm-hmm. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll get back to game two later on tonight, 6 p.m. pregame, 7 p.m. puck drop. What do you think is going to happen tonight? You got any bold predictions? We'd love to hear them. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on WGR.